Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Now celebrating 5 years of burning up the airwaves.
If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place.
You're listening to the voice of small business.
This is Dr. Fraser Crane. I'm listening.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you very much for joining us. 800-531-3815, toll free coast to coast. And our website is www.jbsba.com. Khalid Hosseini is our guest, ladies and gentlemen, and our new friend. He's the author of a book. It's his first book. It's a novel. It's called The Kite Runner, which doesn't sound anything at all like what you might think the book would be about. But it's about a book. The book is about Afghanistan, people who are from Afghanistan. And I'm just going to get him to tell us his story a little bit, and then I've got some questions I want to ask him, because as many of you may remember, I've been very interested in Afghanistan for a long time. And Khalid Hosseini, welcome to the show.
Yeah, good morning, Jim.
Good morning to you. It's good to have you with us. And congratulations on your book, The Kite Runner. It's and by the way, folks, Khalid is a physician in Southern California. What kind of medicine do you practice, Khalid?
I do internal medicine.
Yeah. Tell us about your background and lead us into how you wound up writing a novel about your story.
Well, I lived in Afghanistan for the first 11 years of my life. I lived in the mid-1960s and the mid-1970s. I left Afghanistan in 1976 and haven't lived there since. I lived in France for about 4 years and in the United States since 1980, so I was fortunate to not have been in Afghanistan when things fell apart,
right.
And watched everything from a distance, and watched Afghanistan sort of appear and disappear in the headlines.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, when 9/11 happened, suddenly everybody wanted to know about Afghanistan, and it was on the front page of just about every newspaper, and books were coming out on Afghanistan.
Right.
And everybody was talking about it. And by then, I was halfway through this manuscript that I was writing, and it was a novel, unlike all the books that were coming out on Afghanistan, which were nonfiction and about the Taliban usually, or mm-hmm. about the politics of Central Asia.
Right.
And my novel was taking shape as a coming-of-age story that began in the Afghanistan that's rooted in my memories, and that is the Afghanistan of the early 1970s, back before, most people even knew that it existed.
Right.
Afghanistan then was a quiet, peaceful nation living in, essentially, in anonymity almost.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the Afghanistan that I remember, and that's really the Afghanistan in the first third of the book. The book takes place over a span of 30 years, starting in those days, and then takes the reader through the communist coup and the Soviet war and the Mujahideen infighting and the Taliban by telling the story of a very unusual and strong friendship between two boys.
Well, and of course, the two boys' name are Amin and Baba.
Amir and Baba. And Hassan. Baba is Amir's father.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Amir who is
That's right, and Hassan.
Mm-hmm. Right. Amir is the rich one. He is a mm-hmm. Pashtun, which is the majority ethnicity in Afghanistan. And Hassan is his servant.
Right.
And he is a Hazara, which...
But the boys grew up. They were born basically at the same time. They grew up together in their early years, didn't they?
They grew up as servant and master and had this, this unusual friendship beside that.
Right. Yeah. Well, how autobiographical is this?
Well, there are certainly autobiographical elements in it. It's not an autobiography. I do want to be clear on that.
Right, because right. It's a novel.
It's a novel, and for a good chunk of the book, Amir borders on somewhat of an unsavory character. I mean, mm-hmm. he goes through a lot of growth by the time the novel ends. But certainly Amir's life and mine have some parallels. We about the same age, and
right.
both lived in Afghanistan in the 70s and mm-hmm. moved to the States in the 1980s to live as immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
I drew from my own life to write the passages in America where Amir is going through the Afghan-American immigrant experience.
Mm-hmm.
That's obviously something I'm familiar with.
Things that if I handed somebody a book and I said, this is a book about Afghanistan people and about the country and the experiences of those people, and they saw the title, The Kite Runner, they wouldn't understand. And when we come back, I want you to tell us about the title, and then I want to talk about Afghanistan some, because this is a very interesting country to me, folks. Very interesting people, very fierce people, and people that I've admired for a long time. Tony Tail, stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back at 17 Till. Thank you very much for joining us. Khalid Hosseini is our guest. He's the author of the new novel called The Kite Runner. And we're going to talk about Afghanistan a little bit more in depth. And I've got some questions for Khalid about Afghanistan. And he's gone back there recently after having been gone for a number of years. But before we do that, I want to talk about the title of your book, Khalid, because I haven't read your entire book, but I've gotten into it a little bit, and I think people will be very much interested in this story. It's a great story of growth, as you said earlier. It's a great story of history and of love and loyalty as well. And I think especially people who are interested in that part of the world would love this story. But it's called The Kite Runner. Tell us why it's called The Kite Runner.
Well, you know, kite flying is something that all boys in Kabul did. You know, it's not like we could play video games or get on the computer. So we flew kites, and we actually fought kites. Kite fighting, especially in the wintertime, was, you know, a very old tradition in
mm-hmm.
Kabul. And the way it was done is that you took your string and you ran it through a mixture of glue and ground glass, so it became like basically glass string, very, very sharp.
Uh-huh.
And then you flew your kite, and the objective was to sever the other guy's line. And when his kite was cut, then you went chasing after it. And, you know, and sometimes it was a fierce chase, and people, you know, elbowed each other to get to the kite. And the kite runner is a term that I sort of invented to describe that process of chasing the kite that's coming down.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting, and so folks, you see the title is embedded in the history of this, actually of Khalid, but also of the primary subject in the book, Amir. Talk to us about Afghanistan. You went back after 27 years, didn't you?
Yes, I went back this past March, and I was in Kabul for 2 weeks after, about 27 years.
And you left as a very young boy, so I know you had some memories, but probably not that many. And how did you find Afghanistan when you went back?
I actually had a lot of memories. I mean, I left when I was 11, so I had
mm-hmm.
this wealth of memories and images. How did I find Kabul when I went back? It was really an emotional roller coaster. You walk down any block in Kabul, and you're bound to see the scars of war.
Yes.
And there's bits and pieces of history at every single street corner. You will see everybody in Kabul in some way bears the scars of war, whether it be visible in the sense of a missing leg or a missing arm, whether it be a widow sitting at a street corner, or just the myriad of orphans that
mm-hmm.
are running around Kabul. Or whether it be people who will tell you the stories of all the horrible things they saw during the wars against the Soviets, during the Mujahideen infighting era, as well as during the Taliban.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also beauty in Kabul, undeniable beauty. And most of it from the people themselves. I was just floored by the spirit of the people and everything they've been through and how they've managed to maintain their integrity and their honor and their kindness. It was very, very moving.
Now, I know some people from some Afghanis who have lived here for a number of years. They run restaurants that I frequent when I go back to Washington, D.C., and I love the food. As you and I spoke a minute ago, my favorite is there are three favorites. There's a soup called Osh.
Mm-hmm.
There's an entree and an appetizer called Oshak, which is a noodle, folks. It's wonderful. And then there's a main entree called Kwabili Palau, which is rice and caramelized carrots and I know I'm making you hungry, folks, and raisins and lamb marinated in yogurt. It's wonderful. If you ever get to go to an Afghan restaurant, order the Kwabili Palau. But anyway, I digress. But I've met
taste.
A lot of these people over the years, and they're so proud of their country, but they're here in America. How did the Afghanis who haven't left, who didn't leave, how do they treat you when you go back?
Well, I went back with some small amount of trepidation about that. I thought I might, that people might be a little antagonistic, and I saw very, very little of that, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly, for the most part, people were gracious. They were kind. They were very curious about America and what life is like there, and they were very willing to tell their stories. Kabul is strange. You can walk down the street at any block, stop anybody on the street, and strike up a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And they will tell you everything. They'll tell you everything they saw in the wars. They'll tell you about their family and their personal experiences. So people were very generous, and it's just amazing.
Well, now, one of the things I want to talk about is the hope for Afghanistan and what your attitude is about. Now that you've been there, you obviously understand the politics more now than you did when you were 11 years old, obviously. And when we come back after these messages, I want you to talk to us about your thoughts on the hope for Afghanistan. The Taliban are supposedly gone. We've got a new, hopefully a new government that's emerging there with the support of other countries. And I want to ask you about that. If you see some success emerging over there, and if you've got any long-term hope for the prospects of Afghanistan. And we're going to do that right after these messages, folks. It's 10 till. We're visiting with Khalid Hosseini. The book is called The Kite Runner. It's a novel that I recommend to you, and it's available wherever books are sold.
Roll away again. Yeah. I'm sitting on the dock.
We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.jbsba.com. We're visiting with a new friend, Khalid Hosseini, who's the author of a novel called The Kite Runner. And it's about the story of the people of Afghanistan, a couple of families in particular, and their lives over a number of years. It sort of follows Khalid's life, but it sort of doesn't. It's not an autobiography, but it's a very interesting story, folks, and it's a very poignant story, and I think you'll enjoy it, especially those of you who love nonfiction or who love fiction. I think you'll love this story a lot. And again, Khalid, congratulations on your first book. I know how big a deal that is. And by the way, folks, Barnes & Noble and Borders are good places I know to get the book, right, Khalid?
Yeah, right.
So check that out. Also, Amazon.com. And let me spell Khalid's last name, Hosseini, 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 if you're typing that into the search engine there. And the book is called The Kite Runner, just like you would think it would be spelled. Okay, what are your feelings about the future of Afghanistan under the current situation?
Well, I think I'm an optimistic person by nature, I'm very cautiously optimistic about Afghanistan. I think some good things have happened there since the Taliban were ousted. Schools have reopened, and something like 2 million children have returned to school. There have been
including girls.
Vaccination programs have been started. Medical centers are opening. There's a new currency in Afghanistan that's actually working. But there are, you know, the task of rebuilding Afghanistan is Homeric in proportion. And it's a gigantic task.
And well, and it's something that's really has been needed. Afghanistan has been sort of falling apart for 20-something years, hasn't it?
Well, you know,
going on a
quarter of a century,
yeah.
Afghanistan has lost its infrastructure, its agriculture, its education, much of its culture. It's decimated, and the fabric of society has been tattered, and Afghanistan needs to be rebuilt from the ground up. So there's some real, you know, sizable obstacles on that path.
What needs to happen over there?
Do we have another hour?
I'm afraid not, but
yeah.
I mean, is the new government that's being put in place, is it going to be enough? Is it going to get the job done?
Well, I think one of the big problems has been that the new government, although has done very well in Kabul, has had a real tough time finding its footing outside of the capital.
You still got the tribes out in the country that the warlords who think that they own their part of the world, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. The warlords are fully entrenched in the provinces, and they run them pretty much as their private fiefdoms.
Yeah.
And I think that this warlord culture and their culture of impunity really undermines the authority of the central government in Kabul.
It fosters things like the Taliban, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean the infighting between these different warlords and their legions of followers was really what created the environment in which people like the Taliban could come. And Kabul between 1992 and 1996 truly was the proverbial hell on earth.
Mm-hmm.
The difficulty of life under the Taliban is well documented, but the difficulty of life, a lot of people don't know that the 4 years preceding the takeover by the Taliban were truly atrocious times for people living in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
In Kabul, and I have passages in the book that describe this, when the protagonist goes back to Pakistan and learns about this, you know, Kabul was fractured into various factions, and there were these invisible lines. And
mm-hmm.
if you were to cross the street, chances were you had crossed one of those lines,
uh-huh.
and a sniper would shoot you from the mountain.
Wow.
And there were, one guy told me in Kabul, and in the book there's a reference to this as well, that one day he counted over 2,000 rockets hitting Kabul in one single day.
Wow.
And that's why when the Taliban came, they brought with them a promise of peace.
They brought order, but they also brought another kind of chaos. Let me ask you a quick question, and I only have time for a short answer.
Sure.
Do you think that the Afghanis in general were glad that America came in and the allies came in there?
I think by and large, yes.
All right. One more quick question. Your Hassan, is he still alive?
There is no Hassan in my life.
Okay, are you sure?
I swear.
Okay, I just wanted to get that out. If you read the book, folks, you'd be glad I asked that question. Thanks, Khalid, for being
here. Thank you, Jim.
We'll do it again another day. Hassan, Khalid Hosseini, ladies and gentlemen. The book is called The Kite Runner, wherever books are sold. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, small business advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.